I'll get to my topic on government spending and fraud in just a moment. But first, I'd like to tell you that my new book, Cutting to the Chase, is in its final stages, and it'll be out this fall. The book will sell for $16.95 plus $4 shipping, or a total of $20.95. But we're accepting pre-orders of the book, which will save you $4 in shipping costs. The cost of my book for you then, pre-ordered, will be $16.95. But hurry, because this pre-sale will not last long. In this book, I offer my take on world and state events. Some of my commentaries can be found in there as well, and a dose of a character I created and voiced for my radio stations. His name is Clyde Rambo, and if he can't make you laugh, nobody can. Truth is hard to find today with the liberal fake news media on the hunt against Donald Trump day in and day out. In my book, you'll find the truth, well-researched and frank. To pre-order my book, just send a check or money order for $16.95 to Joiner Management Services at 415 Wayfield, Wayfield Lane in Cary, Cary, North Carolina, 27518. That's Joiner Management Services at 415 Wayfield Lane, Cary, North Carolina, 27518. If you didn't get that address, just call WTSB at 919-934-6789, and they'll give it to you. My book, Cutting to the Chase, has taken almost 2 years of my life to reach publication, and I promise you will learn things you did not know and get a chuckle along the way. Pre-order today for $16.95 and save the $4 in shipping costs. We all know that there are many people who are taking advantage of our system. Every government program designed to help the poor is quickly scammed. Fraud is rampant, from cash assistance for illegals in California to restaurant owners buying food with food stamps. It seems our welfare system is in no short supply of fraud. It's estimated that 8 million people receive fraudulent benefits collecting SSI and SSD, welfare, and food stamps, while in perfect health. And millions of disabled veterans cannot get the assistance or benefits they need. One case that stands out above the rest. When Jesse Jackson Jr., son of the famed Reverend Jesse Jackson, was sentenced in a case of missing $750,000 of campaign funds, his defense lawyers pleaded that he had no other income to survive on, other than Social Security payments and federal employee retirement system benefits. When the news outlets like Breitbart began looking into the case, it seems that when he resigned as a congressman, all of a sudden, after 17 years in Congress, campaigning and seeking the limelight, he disappeared, right during the heart of his criminal indictment process. His office released a statement that he was exhausted. Daddy Jackson found a lawyer, or rather a doctor, that signed off on paperwork that fast-tracked his son's claim of mental illness. Jackson was too young to draw his retirement from the federal employees' retirement system, from being in Congress for 17 years. In order to have retired early, he would have had to be 65 or served in the system for 20 years. However, with this newly discovered mood disorder, he was eligible to retire early under disability. That means he was eligible for $104,000 or $8,700 a month for the first year, and $69,000, or roughly $5,800 a month thereafter. It also entitled Jackson to his Social Security payments. With most people in the United States, that amounts to roughly between $900 and $1,800 a month, depending on the job and the rate of pay when they were disabled. But the Jackson family attorneys made sure their mood disorder suffering son received a package of $45,000 a year. That's roughly $3,750 a month, on top of his federal pension. Jackson Jr., a man that pled guilty to tax trouble and misuse of campaign funds, was paid his federal disability for mood disorders, despite no prior history of mental illness, while he served his 2.5-year prison sentence on the charges. That meant for the first year, he made $12,450 a month. And for the next year and a half, he received $9,950 a month, all while serving time on criminal money charges in a federal prison. A disabled combat veteran at 50% disability makes just $900 a month, or roughly $10,800 a year. He or she goes through miles of red tape and one phone call away from the VA giving Social Security false information illegally and not providing medical records to the review panel costs 30% of his or her back pay. If the lawyers ever get it straight, the veterans fought for this country and they deserve their benefits. When we tolerate welfare abuse, it costs us all. Let me call your attention to the problem. There are so many Medicaid fraud stories that it's hard to choose the most egregious one. But since Democrats want to talk about Russia, consider that the Manhattan District Attorney accused 49 current and former Russian diplomats of participating in an alleged scheme that garnered nearly $1.5 million in fraudulent Medicaid benefits. The Russian diplomats were charged with underreporting their incomes so they could qualify for Medicaid. Over the last decade, 8 years of which were overseen by the Obama administration, 92% of New York-based Russian diplomats' childbirths were paid for by Medicare, a program designed to cover poor United States citizens. Medicaid pays, and I think I said Medicare, I certainly mean Medicaid. Medicaid pays about two-thirds of the elderly's long-term medical costs. That money is meant for poor seniors. But many seniors in nursing homes have significant assets in homes, up to $802,000 worth in some states, cars and savings. Indeed, there's a legal specialty known as elder care attorneys who help families hide grandma's assets so she can qualify for Medicaid. The Miami Herald ran a story about a South Florida woman found guilty of Medicaid and Medicare scams, costing taxpayers $20 million. A doctor in Houston was charged with defrauding Medicare OD $158 million involving false claims for mental health treatments. Italian, Russian, and Nigerian mobsters have moved into the Medicare fraud because it's so easy and lucrative, and if you get caught, lighter jail time. One of the criminals who got caught boasted that he had been making $20,000 to $40,000 a day. While the Democrats under Obama were pushing hard for an extension of long-term unemployment benefits, the U.S. Department of Labor reported that there had been some $7.7 billion wasted in improper unemployment benefit payments in 1 year alone. Among the most fraud-ridden states, Nebraska wins with an 18% improper rate, followed by North Carolina at 17.5%, New Jersey and Louisiana at 16%, and Maine and Ohio at 14%. Maine's governor has moved quickly to stop the fraud in his state. Ask yourselves why Republicans and conservatives are heartless for not wanting to expand these fraud-ridden programs, while Democrats are compassionate for letting hard-earned tax dollars be stolen by these fraudsters. In an upcoming commentary, I will detail for you the 10 worst cases of welfare fraud ever so far. For the last 50 years of my life, I've listened to the calls for more taxes. Every special interest group has a handout, and expects that palm to be greased by Congress. Unfortunately for the working people in America, the votes that congressmen and women buy with your tax money has put us into a $20 trillion hole. When special interests have themselves rewarded by Congress, they pony up more contributions for individual congresspersons. If our money had been well spent by government, we could at least appreciate that. But as a report by Brian Riedel of the Heritage Foundation pointed out, government waste, fraud, and abuse has put a strain on the approximately 50% of Americans who pay the taxes that support government. I'll get to specific examples of government waste, fraud, and abuse in a moment, but most Americans don't realize how Congress protects its individual members. Haven't you ever wondered why Elijah Cummings could aid and abet Lois Lerner in her use of the IRS to attack conservatives and not be in prison? How Lerner pleaded the Fifth Amendment to avoid prosecution for her unlawful actions at the IRS? How Hillary Clinton could erase more than 30,000 emails after Congress warned her not to do so and still avoid a contempt of Congress citation? It's because members of Congress cover up things like that to protect one another. If you go after them, they can come after you. For all of their bluster, neither Democrats nor Republicans want to impose actual punishment upon members of their party or members of the opposing party. If they don't press too hard, they can count on not being pressed hard when they themselves are in the hot seat. When CBS News reported in 2011 that members of Congress weren't prohibited from insider trading, Congress moved swiftly. A law banning that practice was signed within 6 months of that broadcast. Members of Congress knew full well that insider trading was going on and that many members had become extremely wealthy doing what the average American would be imprisoned for. But they chose to keep that secret until it burst into the open and they could hide no longer. But Congress is still exempt from portions of a number of federal laws, including provisions that protect workers in the private sector, but don't apply to the legislative branch's approximately 35,000 workers. The Office of Compliance has urged Congress to apply the laws they pass on the public to themselves, as well as the one thing that Democratic and Republican politicians agree on, and that is covering their tails. The first place to trim runaway federal spending is in waste, fraud, and abuse. Congress, however, has largely abandoned its constitutional duty of overseeing the executive branch and has steadfastly refused to address the waste littered across government programs. Attempts have been made, but they failed. Back in 2003, an attempt by House Budget Committee Chairman Jim Nussel, a Republican from Iowa, to address wasteful spending was rejected by the House of Representatives, and similar calls a year later by then-Senate Budget Committee Chairman Don Nichols, a Republican from Oklahoma, were rejected in the Senate. A small group of House lawmakers formed the Washington Waste Watchers, but their agenda has not been embraced by the whole House, and so it gets nowhere. The sad truth is that the voters send new blood to Congress to make changes needed. But these freshman members are quickly cowed by the career politicians, Republicans and Democrats. If they don't walk lockstep with the party, be it Democrat or Republican, they are threatened with the loss of prestigious committee assignments and even the threat of being primaried. That's when party leadership gives money and support to someone they choose to run against their own party member, who they feel they can't control. Lack of information about the waste in government is not the problem today. Government waste investigations and recommendations can be found in hundreds of reports. With all of this available information, and in an era of tight budgets, why are lawmakers so resistant to reducing waste? One reason is that they see it as a thankless job that would go unnoticed back home. With Congress in session, just 80 days annually, reducing waste would take precious time away from most lawmakers' higher priorities of increasing spending on popular programs and bringing pork barrel projects home. A second reason is that some of the most wasteful programs are also the most popular, like Medicare abuse, and lawmakers fear that opponents would betray them as attacking these popular programs, and so consequently, waste and inefficiencies continue to build up, costing taxpayers more while providing beneficiaries with less. A real war on government waste could easily save over $100 billion each year without harming the legitimate operations and benefits of government programs. Now, here are some of the examples of past waste, fraud, and corruption in government. Pour yourself a cup of coffee and lend me your ear. I guarantee that ear will be burning after you hear where your hard-earned tax dollars are going. Back in 2003, in the Department of Treasury's financial report of the United States government, is a short section titled Unreconciled Transactions Affecting the Change in Net Position, which explains that these unreconciled transactions totaled $24.5 billion. The unreconciled transactions are funds for which auditors cannot account, like the $6 billion that was missing when Hillary Clinton left the State Department. The government knew that $25 billion was spent by someone somewhere on something, but auditors did not know who spent it, where it was spent, or on who it was spent, blaming those unreconciled transactions on the federal government's failure to report their expenditures adequately. The Treasury Department concluded that locating the money was a priority. They never found the money. The unreconciled $25 billion could have funded the Department of Justice for an entire year. This malfeasance has been going on for decades. When Hillary Clinton left the office of Secretary of State, as I said earlier, $6 billion was missing. That money has never been recovered. I'll give you other examples of the past with the understanding that these faulty practices continue today. This is a major reason why the United States is $20 trillion in debt. A government audit revealed that between 1997 and 2003, the Defense Department purchased and then left unused approximately 270,000 commercial airline tickets at a cost of $100 million. Even worse, the Pentagon never bothered to get a refund for those fully refundable tickets. The Government Accounting Office blamed a system that relied on department personnel to notify the travel office when purchased tickets went unused. There was no backup plan. Auditors also found 27,000 transactions between 2001 and 2002 in which the Pentagon paid twice for the same airline ticket. The department would purchase the ticket directly and then inexplicably reimburse the employee for the cost of the ticket. These additional transactions cost taxpayers $8 million. Even though employees pocketed that money, nobody was prosecuted. This $108 million could have purchased 7 Black Hawk helicopters, 17 M1 Abram tanks, or a large supply of additional body armor badly needed for U.S. troops in Afghanistan and Iraq. At the Department of Agriculture, federal employee credit card programs were designed to save money, rather than weaving through a lengthy procurement process to acquire basic supplies. Federal employees could purchase job-related products with credit cards that would be paid for by their agency. What began as a smart way to streamline government has since been corrupted by some federal employees who have abused the public trust. An audit revealed that employees at the Department of Agriculture diverted millions of dollars to personal purchases through their government-issued credit cards. Sampling 3,000 employee purchases over 6 months, investigators estimated that 15% abused their government credit cards at a cost of $5.8 million. Taxpayer-funded purchases included Ozzy Osbourne concert tickets, tattoos, lingerie, bartender school tuition, car payments, and cash advances. The USDA pledged a thorough investigation, but 55,000 credit cards are still in circulation, including 1,549 that are held by people who no longer work at the USDA. Those who stole the money got away with it, as no real attempt was made to prosecute or to recover the money from fraudsters. The Defense Department uncovered its own credit card scandal. Over one 18-month period, Air Force and Navy personnel used government-funded credit cards to charge at least $102,000 for admission to entertainment events, $48,250 for gambling debts, $69,300 for cruises, and $73,950 for exotic dance clubs and prostitutes. Again, those scammers got away with fleecing the taxpayers. All should have been prosecuted and forced to repay the stolen money. But the government response was half-hearted. Medicare wastes more money than any other federal program, yet its strong public support leaves lawmakers hesitant to address program inefficiencies, which cost taxpayers and Medicare recipients billions of dollars annually. For example, Medicare pays as much as 8 times what other federal agencies pay for the same drugs and medical supplies. The Department of Health and Human Services compared the prices paid by Medicare and the Department of Veteran Affairs health care program for 16 types of medical equipment and supplies, which account for 1/4 of Medicare's equipment and supplies purchased. The evidence showed that Medicare paid an average of more than double what the VA paid for the same items. The largest difference was for saline solution, with Medicare paying $8.26 per liter compared to $1.02 paid by the VA. These higher prices not only cost the program more money, but also take more money out of the pockets of Medicare beneficiaries. Higher prices mean higher copayments. Medicare also overpaid for drugs. Medicare's payments for 24 leading drugs are $1.9 billion higher than they would have been under the prices paid by the VA or other federal agencies. Although Medicare is supposed to pay wholesale prices for drugs, it relies on drug manufacturers to define the prices, and these manufacturers have strong incentives to inflate prices. Nor are inflated prices for drugs and supplies the most expensive examples of Medicare's inefficiencies. Basic payment errors in deliberate fraud and administrative errors cost $12.3 billion annually. As much as $7 billion owed to the program went uncollected or has been written off. That's just 1 year. Putting it all together, Medicare reform could save taxpayers and program beneficiaries $20 to $30 billion annually without reducing benefits. That would be enough to fund a $3,000 refundable health care tax credit for nearly 10 million uninsured low-income households. There are more costs that most people don't realize. When you visit your doctor or hospital, Medicare makes its payment, and your secondary insurance, if you have it, pays a bit more, but the remainder of the bill is written off on their taxes by doctors and hospitals. That means they pay less in taxes. Back in 2002, the Department of Education received an application to certify student loan participation in the Ihaka Institute of London, England. After approving that certification, the department received and approved student loan applications from 3 Ihaka students, and it reimbursed them $55,000. The Education Department administrators overlooked one problem. Neither the Ihaka Institute nor the 3 students who received the $55,000 ever existed. The fictitious college and students were created on paper by congressional investigators to test the Department of Education's verification procedures. All of the documents were faked, right down to naming one of the fictional lone student applicants, Susan M. Collins, after the senator who requested the investigation. Such carelessness helps to explain why federal student loan programs routinely receive poor management reviews from government auditors. At last count, almost $30 billion worth of student loans are in default, and too many cases of fraud are left undetected. Tracking students across federal programs, verifying loan application data with IRS income data, and implementing controls to prevent the disbursement of loans to fraudulent applicants could save taxpayers billions of dollars. Significant waste and fraud and abuse pervade Medicaid, which provides health services to almost 50 million low-income Americans. While states run their own Medicaid programs, the federal government reimburses an average of 57% of each state's costs. This system gives states an incentive to over-report their Medicaid expenditures in order to receive larger federal reimbursements. Not surprisingly, the GAO has identified state schemes that shift money between state accounts to create an illusion of higher Medicaid expenditures. Similarly, some states have spent their federal Medicaid dollars on non-Medicaid purposes, a practice that costs the federal government well over $2 billion every single year. The Earned Income Tax Credit, or EITC, provides $40 billion in refundable tax credits to some 29 million low-income families. The IRS has estimated that $8.5 to $9.9 billion of that amount, nearly one-third of it, is wasted in overpayments. The complexity of the EITC law leads to many of these mistakes. Calculating the credits is more complex than calculating regular income taxes. While the credit amount depends on the number of children in a household, the tax code does not clearly define how a child qualifies for the credit. In addition, fraud and underreporting of income from common and are common, and the IRS lacks the resources to verify the qualifications of all earned income tax credit claimants. Government's layering of new programs on top of old ones inherently creates duplication. Having several agencies perform several duties is wasteful. They're similar duties, and it confuses program beneficiaries who have to navigate each program's distinct rules and requirements. Some overlap is inevitable because some agencies are defined by whom they serve. For example, veterans, Native Americans, urbanites, and rural families, while others are defined by what they provide, things like housing, education, health care, and economic development. Then, these agencies' constituents overlap. Each relevant agency will often have its own program with 342 separate economic development programs. The federal government needs to make consolidation a priority. There are 130 programs, for instance, serving the disabled, 130 programs for serving at-risk youth, and 90 early childhood development programs, along with hundreds of other duplications. So why has Congress not taken action to stop this waste, this fraud, this abuse of the taxpayers? Special interest money, pure and simple. For instance, drug companies spend billions of dollars a year lobbying politicians to keep any reform from taking place. There are so many hands in the public till that in turn give money to politicians that reform will never happen unless taxpayers demand it. Again, I call your attention to the constant call for more taxes by liberal Democrats. Having listened today, are you not angered by our political system that punishes hardworking taxpayers and rewards those of us who are among us, individuals and corporations, who are literally spending us blind? What I've told you today isn't a secret on Capitol Hill. I'll bet it was a secret to you, though, because the political parties don't address it, and the liberal mainstream media would rather spend time giving publicity to anarchists marching to demand President Trump's tax returns. And most of us have known that our politicians, Democrat and Republican, spend most of their time dialing for dollars and spend some 80 days a year on the people's business. What most Americans do not know is the depth of the waste, fraud, and abuse that I reported to you today, and the lack of effort on the part of Congress to find and punish the fraudsters, as well as forcing the return of the money that was scammed from our taxes. This will continue until the people make it clear that their re-election depends upon their conduct in office. And the only way we're going to get this turned around is term limits, and politicians will fight it tooth and nail until death. They go to Washington to stay. They build their nests. They build up defenses against not being reelected, and they hustle for dollars. When they're hustling for dollars, you and I get burned. So term limits is basically the only way we're ever going to turn this around. And I'm not sure how we accomplish that. We certainly can demand from our congresspersons when they are running for election, how long do you intend to be there? If they say more than two terms, tell them you'll vote for somebody else. I think that when House members are running for office, they should have four-year terms, not two. When you have 2 years, they have to start hustling for dollars the day after election. And that's what they've got to do for the next 2 years. Give them a four-year term and allow them to be reelected one more time. That's 8 years. Now, in the Senate, they have six-year terms. And what we should do is to give them a reelection of six more. That's 12 years in Congress. Anything resembling 12 years in Congress is going to make you dependent. And when I say you, I mean the congresspersons, dependent upon these special interests. Your need for more and more dollars grows and grows. And who's going to scratch that itch? Special interests. We can do better. We must do better. And it all starts with us paying attention to what's happening in that swamp called Washington. Carl?